This week's conversation with Sarah Dennis is sponsored by Sassy Jack's Stitchery. Kim and the folks at Sassy Jack's are getting ready to open their new Forever Home this fall, and it promises to be a destination store for needleworkers from all corners. In addition to all the new charts that were introduced at Needlework Expo, be sure to check out the full collection of Sassafras sampler charts, including Alice Ellen Usher 1873, Christian Henry 1816, and Elizabeth Cooper, Jesus Wept. Many of these Sassafras charts are available as PDF downloads, and Kim will be happy to put together kits for all of them. Make Sassy Jack Stitchery your local needlework store by visiting the website at sassyjackstitchery.com, and plan to visit when the new shop opens this fall. Thanks to Sassy Jacks for sponsoring the show, and now, on to our conversation with Sarah Dennis. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artists this week, Sarah Dennis from Sarah Dennis Embroidery. Sarah, welcome.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Well, glad to have you. That was three Sarahs in one sentence. That's pretty good. I'm pretty proud of that. Yep. Okay, we have to, right out of the gate, repair shop show.
Yeah.
We watched some of those. Unfortunately, didn't see one that you're on, and now it's canceled, and it's behind a paywall, and so depressing. But what a beautiful show.
It really is lovely, and the people on it that you see on television are exactly like that in real life. They're so talented but humble, and it's such a team. Everybody helps everybody else, and I think one of the main reasons it works so well is there's no money. No money's involved at all.
Oh.
We don't value the goods. We don't buy them. We repair them and give them back.
Really?
Yep. Yep. So none of the craftspeople is interested in how much anything's worth. It's worth what it's worth to the person that's brought it in.
Because that was one of the things when we would watch the show that we thought, oh, my word, that must have cost them a fortune to have that done.
Nope, they don't pay. They come down. It's right down in the south of England, right on the coast. So they send a video in. It's good. It's a lovely story. And they come down and they bring their thing and then leave it with us and trust us to repair it well. And then they come back and collect it.
Oh, that makes it. That's a level better then. Wow.
Yeah, it really is. And some things are worth nothing, but are priceless.
Right. Right. Exactly.
So the scraggy old teddy bear or something is, you know, it's priceless to somebody.
Yeah. Oh, that is. Now, see, that's special.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why it works so well.
Yeah. Okay. Because you got that genuine feel all the way through, like no hint of business. And that's because there was none.
There is none. You're not hurried. You're not rushed. Everybody works as a team. I had to repair a shabrack, which is a military blanket, horse blanket, ceremonial horse blanket, and I had to do leather work. So I went over to Susie and said, oh my goodness, what needles do I use? What thread do I use? Oh, come on, I'll sort you out. You know, it's very much teamwork. It's absolutely lovely. They're really, really, really genuine people.
And that's the real deal. That's not some stage studio thing. That's a real factory or real building. And
oh, it's a real barn. And in the summer, it's stifling hot. And in the winter, you sit with about four hot water bottles on your lap and try and keep warm. It's not the best working conditions, but it's such good fun.
if I ever get to see him again, I'll have that in mind. She's sitting on water bottles.
Exactly. Yeah. And the more you can get, it's first up, best dressed. Whoever gets there first gets the best water or hot water bottles.
Oh boy. What's that like? I mean, that's a full-blown TV production with all the lighting, all the cameras and everything. And, of course, you know, not to have any of that visible while the recording is going on. What's that like from your perspective when you're trying to restore something and talk about it? Is it quite an adjustment to ignore the lights and the cameras and just go about your business?
It's interesting because you don't just ignore the cameras. You have to tell the cameras, the viewer, what you're doing, why you're doing it, what the history is, what the history of the craft you're doing is. So you actually have to talk at the camera whilst you're working. So it's an interesting dynamic. But the thing that runs through your head most of the time is, this is somebody's really precious thing, and I really don't want to make a mess of it. I've got to do my best on this. It's quite not stressful. It's quite a burden sometimes to think I cannot mess this up.
Yeah. A little pressure there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But the camera crew are absolutely fantastic. They really are. They're so kind and patient. They're really good. If you say I've done it wrong, they stop and that, you know, you start again. They're so patient. Absolutely lovely.
Mm-hmm. That has to be so much fun. So is there a lot of prep work? Like if a project comes in and they decide that they're going to film you doing that project, then is there a lot of work behind it? Or is it the kind of thing where you generally know what to do?
I'm slightly different to some people because I'm the textile expert, and I've got to be able to match up colors, match up threads and fabrics. So I need to see what's going on, but it comes onto the table and then we work from there.
Hmm.
So they've got the whoever's bringing it in, brings it in, puts it on the table, and then we work from there.
Okay. And then one question my wife and I had watching those shows is when you hand the restored piece back to the owner, and our thought was, oh, I bet that cost him a fortune to have that done. You'd really have to think twice about doing that. But not the case, huh?
Nope, they don't pay anything.
Yeah.
Nope, they don't pay anything at all, except for the fact that they've had to come down and be on television. A lot of people don't want to be on television. It scares a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you've got to have the right kind of chatty people that want to, you know, actually want to come on. And they're lovely. The people that come on are absolutely lovely.
Yeah. Well, I know every time that the restored whatever it is handed over, you can see on the owner's face, you know, how much it means to them to see it, this important thing to them, restored and put back to the way it was. And you can just see it in their faces. It's always a neat payoff in the show.
Exactly. And we're always very careful to ask what they want us to do with it, because some people don't want it to look brand new.
Oh.
They want it to look how it did when they were given it.
Okay.
Or something, you know, or they don't want to brand new this, or they don't want to, you know, they don't want you to do certain things. So we're very careful. Jay, the presenter, is always very careful to say, you know, what do you want us to do with it?
Hmm. That's interesting. So that they literally get it back the way they have it in their mind and the way they expect it then.
As far as we can do it, yes.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, is the repair shop still in business, even though there's no show?
Oh, yeah, we're still going on British, on BBC.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're on BBC Primetime. Yeah. They've just done a new series. So there'll be series 11 coming up, I think, 10 or 11.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it's still going big time.
Well, I got to get a BBC subscription then.
Yeah. It's still really popular.
Oh, my. And so then how many episodes in a season do you get involved in? A couple?
Well, no, I've done 12 altogether, I think.
Okay.
12 episodes.
And you just, they have something and they say, they give you a call and say, I've got a textile thing.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, they very rarely hand embroidery, but but textiles, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure you jump and run to go do that.
I do. Some things I have turned some things down because they can't be done. Uh-huh. But yeah, if I can do it, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
What
absolutely
fun.
Love it.
What
yeah,
fun.
It is. It's super,
yeah.
Super.
Yeah. And that, so the whole restoration thing, I mean, that's one of the 15,000 things that you do. How did you come to, because that's a whole different specialty from designing and stitching things.
Absolutely. But in our, course at the Royal School of Needlework, we do a year in studio.
Mm-hmm.
So we're taught at the Royal School of Needlework how to restore stuff.
Okay.
And I really enjoy it. I love it. I do samplers, mostly remounting samplers. And I must have done close to 30 of those now.
Oh.
So, yeah, I really enjoy those. People that bring them in are always really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, that's a whole mixture of science and art to restore things, and you know, especially if they're old and brittle and beat up.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I try. Yeah, usually samplers, but again, samplers are a bit like the repair shop. They're usually somebody's great, great, great grandma. I've just done one that's 1810. Yeah, so they're usually somebody's great, great, great grandma. And although some of them aren't worth anything, they're part of the family.
Yeah.
So they want to keep that sort of memory alive, I guess, and hand it down.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh. So then that's, I'm sure every one of those restorations or conservations is its own experience, that you can't go into automatic mode on those things.
You certainly can't. And again, you've got somebody's precious object in your studio and you don't want to mess it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of my more, I have to be more, my more careful things. I sit down quietly and lock the door and get on with it quietly.
Yeah, that was my next thing was, I'll bet you have to be absolutely alone and completely focused.
Just for those, because my studio is in Lancaster Castle, which is open to the public. And I really don't mind the public coming in and having a chat and things. And but yeah, when I'm doing that, I lock the door and sort of ignore everybody, turn my back to the window and get on with it.
Yeah, is that as fun as stitching and designing, or just a different kind of fun?
It's a different kind. Yeah, so I'm not sure it's fun.
Okay.
It's very rewarding. It's really rewarding because when people get back, it's like, oh my God, it's so clean and it looks so nice. And I've got a lovely framer who lives in the next town and we tend to work together and he knows exactly what I want. So they bring this sort of natty piece of cloth in and it comes back all mounted and framed up and everything so that it looks so different from when they bring it in. So it's really rewarding. But as I say, it's one of those things where I just sit quietly and do it on my own.
Yeah. And I'm sure that someone brings it in and that, well, how long will it take? And I got to believe it'll take as long as it takes. Sorry.
Yeah, I've got pretty quick at it. If people are in a rush, I can get it done. If I work all weekend, I can probably do one. But yeah, it takes a good long. It depends, of course, on the size. One guy brought one in and they're usually about the size of a notepad, you know, sort of A4 letter size.
Uh-huh.
This was the size of a great big television.
Oh my.
It was huge. So that one took a bit longer. He said, I bet you didn't expect that, did you? And I'm like, no. But it was a lovely sampler. But yeah, that was quite big. So a lot of it depends on the condition and the size and what I can do with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you see some that are truly immediately obviously valuable?
Some are valuable. Mostly they're just precious to people.
Yeah.
You know, and I've only had one that I couldn't do, and she'd put it in the washing machine.
No.
Yeah, and there was this ball of stuff.
Oh no.
And I said, you know, I just can't do anything with it.
Oh.
And she said, I googled it and it said I could put it in a hand wash in the washing machine. And I'm like, okay.
Oh no.
Yeah. So that was the only time I've said I'm really sorry. I've had ones that are nearly falling apart and I've sort of put them on a jigsaw on a piece of linen and they look quite cool actually with great big holes in them and things because they're really well worn. But no, it's the only one where I've said, nah, can't do it.
Oh, just because it's on the internet does not make it true.
Exactly. Exactly. Do not put any old linen in the washing machine.
Oh, that must have been sickening to see. Oh.
And she, I don't know what she thought I could do with it, but anyway, it was, she was very sad. I think she felt guilty, of course, you know.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Can't undo that kind of thing. That's for sure.
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
Oh, geez. Yeah. So that was the, your studio in Lancaster Castle. I wondered about that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that historic place, and I looked that up. Holy smokes, that's a giant place.
It is.
What's that? I mean, that's got to be special to be doing, an art form that is as old as time in a facility that is so old It just kind of all fits together. Is that what is your studio like? Are there several artists in the castle, or how does that?
Nope, there's me and a stonemason. That's it. And it's a huge. They're renovating the castle as we speak. It was a prison until 2010, and the prison left, and the Duchy of Lancaster got it back. The Duke of Lancaster is the Queen, so it belongs to the Crown. Mm-hmm. And I have the old hospital wing, and I have a huge old studio. It's absolutely brilliant. Can fit 12 people in here. And as I say, the public come in, and I'm right opposite a Shishi coffee shop, and I get free coffees. So I'm made.
Boy. All right.
Yeah, and it's the castle where the Lancashire witches were tried and later hanged for witchcraft.
Yeah, no, I was looking on the website there and events and things, and there are all these depressing negative things that happened to that castle.
Yeah, it's got a pretty bloody history, I must say.
I wanted to say put up something positive, you know.
It's lovely now, absolutely lovely. It really is lovely to visit now, and it's a beautiful building. I'm really, really, really lucky. My studio is outstanding. I genuinely don't know anybody that's got a nicer studio. I'm so lucky.
So you're right in the, like, all stone all around you and heavy yep. wood floors and...
Yep, stone ceilings. Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, absolutely. And I look out onto what was the prisoner's parade ground. Yeah, it's lovely.
How did you come to get that? Was it just an opportunity and you seized it, or...?
I just went in and asked for it.
Oh.
I was in the witch's tower, which had no light, it was damp, and the ceiling was falling in. And during COVID, I put up an exhibition about the witches, and they let me move into what was the old hospital wing, which has been done up and is absolutely superb.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's just, I think it's about making opportunities, isn't it? And just being cheeky enough to go and ask.
Yeah, well, yeah, what are they going to say? No?
Right, exactly. You know, it's no, we don't want you. It's like, okay, well, it's worth a question.
Right. And yeah. What is lighting in? I mean, those are old dark places. Did you have to hop up the lighting to have enough, or?
It's literally all been done out. It was going to be an art gallery.
Oh.
So I've got lighting. I've got everything.
Oh, you win.
Yeah. I do. Absolutely. I'm really, really lucky. I know I'm lucky.
Yeah. And of course that's open to tourists. So they just come in, which I'm sure can be a nuisance. But in many ways, that's got to be a lot of fun to have people come in and see your art and see you working at it. And
So it's right. I've got my one wall is all my apprenticeship pieces. So everything I did at the Royal School of Needlework over the 3 years I was there. And people go, if I don't want people in, it's fine. I just lock the door and I put a notice in the door saying, for instance, when I'm doing this, I wouldn't want people coming in and out. But usually I leave the door open and people wander in, and they're usually really interested. I have a sign in the door that says, if you're interested in embroidery, please come in. And they come in and had some lovely chats from people all over the world. It's been great.
Yeah. To be able to share your art with, what fun.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. And enough room. So how many students can you have in for class?
About 12.
Okay.
I generally have about 8, but yeah, I can fit 12 easily.
And that's everybody on slate frames?
That's right.
So room for the trestles and everything. Wow.
Yes. Yeah, it's huge.
You absolutely did win.
I did. And I know I did. I know I'm really lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing close by to your home that you can just come and go and...
Yeah, you're going to hate me for this. I'm even luckier. I'm literally 2 minutes from my house.
No.
Yeah. I'm literally, and there's guards on the gate and everything. So even if I get parcels, they just bring them in. You know, it's lovely.
Oh.
Yeah.
You just made a whole lot of people really jealous.
I know. I know I have. And I know I'm really lucky and I'm really grateful for it. But I'm more than happy to share it. If anybody wants to come and have a play, then I'm here.
Oh,
and it's great because I'm in the north of England, and there aren't many people in the north of England, especially in the northwest.
Yeah.
Doing embroidery, so I'm really lucky, and my groups come here every week, so I'm really lucky.
Yeah, you said you had several groups because we were talking before we started recording. I wondered how you were experiencing now that the pandemic is kind of slowed down. I'd like to say someday it's over, but I'm not so sure about that. But very busy during the pandemic and not really slowed down for you then.
No, I did a lot of online during the pandemic. I'm not that keen online myself. I know it works for a lot of people and I think it's brilliant. I just don't enjoy it. So during the pandemic, I did online work and then I put up this exhibition for the witches. And now I've got 5 embroidery groups going in my studio. Mm. And I some of them are self-taught. Some of them started during the pandemic. Some of them have been coming to me for 5 or 6 years.
So a real mixture then of experience.
Absolutely. I'm going from people that come for 2 hours and put 3 stitches in, have a coffee, have a good old chin wag and go home to people who are pushing me, who are saying, oh, do you think you could do this? And I'm like, oh gosh, never done it before, but hey, let's give it a go. But one thing that I'm absolutely passionate about is that these women, I've got one man. Hey, Richard.
Yay.
I've got one man and they come and it's 2 hours and they have found their clan. We chat about anything. They're all so mutually supportive and friendly and kind to each other. And it's just, I know wellness is a real buzzword at the moment, but it really is just such a lovely environment just to come in. And they're all lovely people and so friendly. I absolutely adore it. It's lovely.
Yeah, well, we've had several conversations and done some shows about the health impact that needlework has. And, positive, it calms you down, all those things. And so you experience that with your people.
Yeah. And they're really mutually supportive. They get together outside of the class and they've got we have a WhatsApp group for each group and they chit chat away on that. And they teach each other. They learn from, I learn from them, but they learn from each other as well. And one group, my longest standing group, we're going to do an exhibition of goddesses. So each person's taken a different goddess and we're going to have an exhibition. So, you know, we're working towards things as well.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's the thing. I'm a former science teacher long ago. And I think if people said, you know, what's the best part of teaching? And I always said, you know, it's when the bell rings and the doors close and it's just me and the kids. But I think a close second is how much you learn from the class.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's not just embroidery. We learn so much about all sorts of things. It really is. It's an honor to be able to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the young, the new stitchers, the people who picked it up during the pandemic, still enthusiastic, still going after it.
Absolutely. I've doubled the number of groups I've done. I'm now doing 5 groups. I think I said I'm doing 5 groups. So yeah, it's just increasing and increasing.
Mm. That's great. That's really great. Because, so many people during the height of the pandemic were just unable to keep up. And in my mind is, you know, when this thing slows down or is over, that people are going to go, everybody's going to go back to normal and all the new stitchers are just going to set it aside.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to hear, and you're not the first one I've heard it from, that things seem to still be continuing. People have actually found a new hobby, art form, new way to express themselves.
Absolutely. And I think if you're encouraging and you encourage that and you make it nice for them to do it, you know, because I don't judge. If somebody wants to do it a different way to me, then that's great if that works for them. I think sometimes it's like, ooh, Royal School of Needlework tutor, they're going to be really picky. and I'm just not. They can do what they like. We just have a really lovely 2 hours stitching together.
Yeah. Well, that's great. That Royal School of Needlework, that's interesting. I suppose at some point that could be intimidating to people that you studied there and graduated and have all the paperwork and teach for them. And
yeah, I think a comment I get quite a lot, which is unfounded, I have to say, is, oh, no, I wouldn't possibly be good enough to come to your class. And it's like the whole point is I'll take you from beginner right the way through and be non-judgmental. I don't judge. And if somebody does it a different way to me, it's the Royal School of Needlework isn't the right way. It's the Royal School of Needlework way. And it works for the Royal School of Needlework. And a lot of the time you try a different way and you think, oh, that's why the Royal School of Needlework do it that way. Mm-hmm. I understand now. You know, I know the rules. I've bent them and now I realize why I should be doing it by the book. But if somebody comes up with a better way of doing it, hallelujah, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Especially if it makes it easier.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've interviewed probably by now dozens of people from, you know, who have graduated in one form or another, and even the people who head the thing up. And that, to me, that's the thing that has come out of it. You know, when I look back at all the conversations, is, you know, the Royal School of Needlework, this is a way to do it. This is the way they do it. It's a way they can do it and have and work on projects like royal garments and stuff, and have several people and have it come, you know, come out so it doesn't look like a patchwork quilt.
Yeah.
You know, that's a way, but I've never felt from anyone that it was, well, the Royal School says do it this way, you must do it this way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And one of the reasons we're taught exactly the same and technically the same is exactly as you said, it's called hot seating, so that if my colleague gets up from the table and I need to carry on from her, then I'll do it exactly the same way as she did it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't look any different. And also when we're teaching, we're all singing from the same hymn sheet most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't confuse people. But it's not the way to do it. And I don't think anybody at the Royal School of Needlework would say we do it right. You know, it's right. My way or the highway. It's a way.
Yeah. You know, I've never had anyone even hint at that. No.
No. No. And I think it's a misconception that some stitchers have, that we are fixed in our ideas and that we do it this way and that's the only way you're allowed to do it. And it's not like that at all. And even when you're at the Royal School of Needlework teaching, if somebody says, well, actually, I'm going to try it this way, it's, go ahead.
Yeah.
You know, great. Absolutely. But one of the reasons it's now called the Future Tutor Course, it was the apprenticeship, are taught that way, is so that we do it exactly the same every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think that's also the thing about the Royal School of Needlework. You think about that really very old, established institution, you know, stuck in their ways and so on and so forth. And in many ways, the Royal School has led the charge into more technology. I mean, they've got that whole Stitch database that they set up, and online courses and courses in the States. And I mean,
yep.
they've really been at the leading edge, and not been, but are at the leading edge of
Absolutely.
Sharing needlework outside of the palace.
Yeah, and I've just got back from Williamsburg, was there in March, I think, for a 2-week class there. And that stitch bank they've done is absolutely superb.
Yes.
It really is a phenomenal resource. It really is.
Yeah, that was some brilliant thinking there. Yeah, for people who don't know about it, the stitch bank at the Royal School, it's available to anyone. But if you wonder how to do a stitch, it's probably there. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, and they've done it really well. I mean, there's the stitch, there's the history of the stitch, there's a picture of the stitch, there's a video of it, and you can make your own little stitch log if you liked. It's a really superb resource.
Yeah, I forget who set that up. We did a show with her, and of
Jackie.
Course, yes, yes.
Yeah, Jackie McDonald.
Yep. And
yeah, she's done a really good job.
Yeah, they thought it through all the way. It's not throw it together and, you know, we'll flesh it out later. It right out of the gate, they had it.
Yeah, it was a long time in the making.
Yeah, no, that's a special resource. Yeah, you know, they should promote it more.
Yeah, absolutely. But they're still adding to it, and I think they will just keep adding to it.
Yeah, I'm not sure you can finish something like that, can you?
Absolutely. I think if a new stitch comes along, they'll pop it on. You know, it's going to be, I think, a sort of global resource, which is absolutely great.
Yeah, and that's the other part of that, you know, global is that key word, because how many stitches, say, that you've never seen that are done in another part of the world or a variation of that, that when you start to do something that's available to everyone around the globe, you know, these things come out of the woodwork and, you know, everybody benefits.
Absolutely. And stitches I haven't seen in England, never mind globally. but I think they are trying to make it more global and get unusual stitches on or different stitches. So I think it's going to be basically a stitch Bible, a digital stitch Bible by the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's superb. But no, I, over the years, just talking to people from the school, you really start to develop a picture of an organization that at first blush just would seem like the stuck in the mud, no fun kind of thing. And they are so far from that that it isn't even an issue.
No, it isn't. And all the tutors are more than happy to get creative and get innovative and move people on.
Right. And that's the other fun thing, and I'm sure you're one of them. You go to the school, you learn, you go through all the courses, and then you get out on your own, and that gives you a foundation to then use your creativity to move on.
Absolutely. I know all the rules. I break them all the time, but but I know them. It gives you a really, really, really good grounding. It was hard work. It was 3 years full time. But it's given me a really, really strong grounding to if I don't. It's given me enough grounding that if I don't know something, I'll say I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'll look it up.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. When you get through that that school, you definitely know whether you love needlework or not.
Yes. You do. You know if you love needlework, and you know if you love teaching needlework. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you end up going to the school? Was that kind of a goal or just?
I've had a really serendipitous life, and I did an art history degree at Lancaster when my husband was in Bosnia. My husband's in the army. And then we got posted to Putney, which is very close to the school. And I'd been once for a day class, and I just thought, do you know what? Let's just go for it. So I went for it.
Mm.
I've always been interested in textiles, and all around the world I've collected textiles wherever we've been posted. But I hadn't done a lot of needlework after my grandmother died when I was very young. And of course life takes over, you know, I was in the army and then you have children and you're off doing other things. But I just thought it was a, why not? And I think it's a really good thing to know. I didn't start at the Royal School of Needlework until I was 50.
Oh, okay.
So you're never too old to learn.
So you had the kids almost raised and... You can start to look
gone.
At what you want.
Absolutely. They'd gone, and it was just such a good meeting of all, everything just happened right, that we were in the right place. My children had gone to university, and so I could do something for myself.
Yeah. Well, that's great. And of course, the question, do we ever finish raising our kids? I don't know.
No, absolutely not.
Just when you think you're done, something comes up.
Exactly. Yep. And not one of the three of them can sew a stitch.
Yeah.
Oh. Nope, they're not remotely interested.
Well, maybe later.
Yeah.
I mean, that's because I've seen that where as children, you're exposed to it and then you don't have any interest and you don't touch it. And then one day a light goes on and you're off
and
running.
I'm still waiting for that light because I don't think it's going to go on.
So what was it like when you started at the Royal School? Did you start to... is it the diploma or the certificate? Did you start out doing that?
No,
or did you just take a course or two or what?
I went. It had always been my mother's dream to go to the Royal School of Needlework just for a day class. So I took her when she was about 80. And I went along with her. I didn't really think about it. And then I thought, do you know what? I'm going to go for it. And it was the third year of the Future Tutor Program, which was the replacement for the apprenticeship. And I just went for it and did that.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So I didn't do the certificate or the diploma. I just jumped straight in with both feet. What an idiot.
Well, that's one way to find out.
I was going to say that's baptism of fire, I think they call that.
Yeah, easily that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was really worth it. It really was worth it.
Yeah. Does there develop all of you folks who teach, does that become kind of its own club of people where you're always in touch? And
yeah, we have a WhatsApp group and we're always asking each other questions. And has anybody know where to get this? And has anybody got any of that? And, you know, this sort of thing. Yeah. Hey, and we meet up. We have tutor meetings once a year, or we did before COVID. And we're all friendly and work, you know, and if I can't do a job, I'll give it to somebody else. You know, it works really well. And at the moment I'm working on, trying to get a sort of name behind us, a sort of master of embroider or something like that. So yeah, we're all invested in it.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Carries on. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it always will.
Yeah. Now you still teach for the Royal School. What is your involvement these days? And then on top of that, when did you decide to kind of go out on your own?
I did Williamsburg in March this year. I think it was March, around that time. And I haven't taught there since then because I'm a good 5 hours journey away from Hampton Court Palace.
Uh-huh.
I'm up in the north of England, there in just outside London. So I don't teach them anymore. But as I said, I'm interested in sorting out master embroiderers and things like that. So I'm very much still connected with them. Why did I go out on my own? I think it was geography. It was just, I'm going to have to go for it because I can't get down to Hampton Court Palace on a whim.
Yeah.
And I like working for myself. It was hard work at first, building up a client base and everything. But yeah, it's worked out quite well, I think.
And when you started to do your own business, was it having classes or design work or both?
No, it was very, I'm much happier teaching than I love designing and creating. I just don't have time for it at the moment, but I love teaching. I absolutely love teaching and seeing how people come on and how much enjoyment they get just out of doing it. You know, even if they're not doing it particularly well, the enjoyment they're doing it. I mean, I have people that come in clapping their hands going, yay, you know, it's Tuesday again. And it's just lovely. And, you know, I found my clan, I found my people. And it's really rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Ah, that's great. I mean, there's the teaching is fun. There's no question about it. A lot of work, but it's fun.
Yeah. But they're all. It's not like teaching children who have to be there. They're by choice, and they all love it.
There's a truth right there.
Yeah.
They want to be there.
Exactly. They want to be there, and it's only for 2 hours. And I give them coffee in the middle.
Hey. Yeah, that'll do it for most people right there.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what classes are you teaching now? Are you at all levels, different techniques?
I do 5 classes a week in my studio, and they're just 2 hours, either in the morning or the afternoon. And people come, and I've got people who are pushing me, mm-hmm. Who are as good as I am technically, and are pushing me, and then I've got some people have been with me 5 or 6 years, so we've been working together for a long time, and then I've got people who have just started and say, oh, I can't possibly design my own thing. It's the design work that really, really frightens people.
Yeah.
And they go from a kit, they can bring their kits if they want, they go from a kit and I can, come on, you can design your own, come on, let's do it. And they can choose whatever technique they like, and they can, and I'm, but I eventually get them to design their own designs and work on their own designs.
Yeah, that's a thing. Here in the States, we are so kit and execute another designer's work oriented.
Yeah.
That's just the orientation. And not a lot of people think of designing their own, but you, of course, that comes from your Royal School training, but in Europe and in the UK, you guys are much more the other way around with your approach.
I think so. I lived in the States for 7 years, and there's a lot of needlework shops that promote kits.
Yeah.
We don't have as many here. We just don't have as many here. And I think if you can get people to appreciate the fact that they can do it, that it's not frightening, and with help they can design something and they can, it's theirs. You haven't stitched somebody else's design. You've started with a piece of paper and a piece of fabric, and you've worked on it, and it's all yours. And they're so proud at the end of it. People get them framed, you know, and I'm, oh my God, look what I created. And it's really nice. But I think you're right. We don't have the number of needlework type shops that you have.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a very different, opposite ends of the spectrum.
Absolutely.
Thing. Yeah. And yeah, as I sit here in this room full of all kinds of designers, things that are all partially started and,
yeah,
you know, that I'm executing, but just lately here more than ever before, I've been kind of looking even at those designs and, you know, what can I do to change this, to make it mine or to make it different? And
absolutely. I do that with people. If they bring something in, I say, why did you choose this? Oh, but I'm not sure about the colors. Change the colors.
Yeah.
You know, do something. If you don't like it, change it. And even with my designs, I teach day classes here during the summer. And if people say, oh, I love it, but I don't like pink, well, go to my drawers and get some blue out then, you know. I don't mind. It's very much, I think people get much more satisfaction out of doing their own work in the end.
Yeah. No, I would agree, though I have not done it completely. I would agree. Yeah, I took that and changed it. I made it this, yeah.
Yeah. But what's the worst that can happen? You throw it in the bin. I've thrown some of my own work in the bin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just, right, didn't work, in the bin, let's move on.
Next thing, yep.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, maybe it's because I've been a theatre sister and I was in the army, and you're not hurting anybody. You know, you're not cutting off the wrong leg.
Yeah, that would be.
Yeah, you know, it's just stitching at the end of the day. I mean, it's important.
I'm keeping that in mind right there. I'm not cutting off the wrong leg, so.
Exactly. Exactly. You're not hurting anybody if you chuck your work in the bin.
Yep. Okay. All right. That does it right there. It gives me the opening. how do you push yourself? I mean, you've got tremendous experience teaching, all the schooling anyone could ask for, but you can't just sit there and just, you know, just sit back and enjoy that. Do you push yourself? What do you do?
I do a lot of CPD. I do a lot of other people's classes. I go, I do all sorts of things that are sort of tangentially related to embroidery. So I'll go and do tassel making with a lady called Anna Crutchley, who's written all the books on it, you know, who's Mrs. Tassel. So I go and do that. I go and do all sorts of things. I go to other embroidery people and learn, because I think it's really good to learn off people who aren't the same as you. And you learn how they teach, and you learn why they teach the way they do. So I do a lot of that sort of thing when I can, when I've got time off. And I also, doing things like this goddess project we're doing, I'm doing one, and I've got to be better than my students.
No pressure there.
That's the tutors. Oh, that's a bit embarrassing, isn't it? So I've got to make sure it looks good. So I'm I do that. I do that sort of thing, and but I let my students look at it and give me feedback.
Uh huh.
So yep. You know, I get on a very, very honest feedback from some of my students. So yeah.
I'll bet. Yeah. Oh man, that's something. Yeah, we're all gonna do one of these things, and yeah, I gotta at least be as good as the best. Yeah. Oof.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've got some really good stitches in my group, so it's not that easy. I'm having to sit there thinking, how can I push this one just one step beyond what anybody else is doing?
Oh.
And then they'll come in and go, oh, I'm going to do this. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to have to push it even further. And it's like, well, it's a bit like having a crop hairdo. You know, it's got to be, it's very basic, but it has to be really good.
Yep.
It's okay. I sort of test my laurels against some of my students.
That's great. That's great. That keeps you on your toes. Yeah.
Yeah, and they give me grief. They really do.
Yeah.
I get a lot of a stick from them, which is great. It's really, I don't mind at all. But yeah, they take the rip out of me all the time.
Yeah. Well, hey, that's part of teaching too. If you're a teacher and you're not willing to learn, then you're not a teacher.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more.
Yep. Yeah, who was that that does the tassels? Because you have a picture up on your Instagram of a tassel, and I think a tassel is just something you hang off the corner or something. Holy smokes, I didn't know that those were a whole art form in their own right.
Oh, my God, yeah, passementerie. It's a French passementerie, and it's tassel making. And it's she's a woman called Anna Crutchley, and she is the tassel person in England that I know of. Absolutely lovely lady, full of stories and where she's done tassels and very, very, very giving of her time and her knowledge. And we had to do a tassel at the Royal School of Needlework, and I did Marie Laveau, the voodoo queen.
Mm-hmm.
So mine's got zebra skin on it and guinea fowl hairs and porcupine quills. And my daughter, who was a rugby player at the time, fell asleep on my sofa, so it's got a lock of her hair on it as well. So, yeah, so it's a very big voodoo tassel.
Yep, but it claims some hair, huh?
Yeah, exactly. She didn't even notice. So, not until I showed her the tassel, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. What is, I mean, you have at your disposal so many techniques. You know, just about any of them that anybody could make a list, you can do.
You're
going
to ask me my favorite, aren't you?
No, I'm going to ask which one you enjoy the most.
Which one do I enjoy? Do you know, I really enjoy mixing them.
Okay.
Which we didn't do during our apprenticeship. We didn't do. But I'm, my goddess, for instance, I'm doing tapestry shading with gold work. With some surface stitching. So I really do quite like mixing them. The one I would never do again is both sides alike.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's my unfavorite. That's just torture.
Yeah, I started a sampler, a two-sided sampler. Got kind of goaded into doing it two-sided. It's not finished, and when I finish it, it will not be finished two-sided. It sucked the joy right out of it.
It's just terrible. Yeah. It looks brilliant and it's very clever. No thanks. If you want me to do a commission for that, I'll do it, but it will cost you £50,000. Yeah, not going there.
Yep. It's so maddening because you get stitching along, you get in your own little world, and you go, "Oh no, what's the back look like?" And
exactly.
Yep.
Yep. And of course, they assess both sides and they have to look exactly the same. And it's, oh my God, I'm sort of 1 millimeter out in my angle. It all has to come out again.
Yep. Yeah. Cause you can't just repair most of those.
No, out it comes. Now, one of the reasons to be fair to the Royal School of Needlework, one of the reasons they teach it is to, do restorations on banners.
Uh huh.
Yeah. So that's it. It's mainly to do conservation.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm with you 100% on that. No, thank you.
No, absolutely not.
Is there a technique that really tests you?
The technique that did test me was silk shading, and that's why I teach it a lot.
Oh.
Because I've made every mistake that you can make. I had I was doing an orange tulip on purple silk, and I'd unpicked it so much, I thought, I didn't remember using cream thread here. I'd unpicked it to the calico. Right through the silk. So I gave that one to my son as target practice and redid it. So I really, really, really genuinely feel people's pain with silk shading.
Yeah. And then the people who do it well, it's like falling off a cliff. It's nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hate them. Yeah. Yeah. Some people just get it. And other people really struggle. And I'm one of the ones that really struggled. And I tried saying, well, it's because I'm left-handed. Or I thought, no, I just struggled.
Well, can't be good at everything, but.
Exactly. Yeah. But I do enjoy teaching it. I really enjoy teaching it. When people get, it's like that aha moment where, oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's worth it.
So in that case, those who can't do teach, that's you.
That's me. No, I can do it now.
Yeah.
I've got to it now. But yeah, that certainly was me. But we also, you tend to find that if you're working in a pair, which you usually do on the certificate and diploma at the Royal School of Needlework, you usually hit other people's strengths.
Ah.
You're usually in with somebody that knows that's good at what you're not good at.
Uh huh. Okay.
And we work so well together that you just say, "Hang on, I'll get so and so to do that because she's better at it than me."
Yeah.
Or you have it. If you don't want to lose face, you just have a quiet chat over coffee and say, "Can you do so and so when we go back in?" So it works quite well.
Yeah. When you teach, you've taught in so many, I mean, of course you have the advantage of historic buildings, ancient historic buildings all over the place,
mm-hmm.
but you've taught in just some special places that must add an extra element to classes.
It does, and it's really interesting. And you get a very different clientele depending on the place.
Mm-hmm.
So the V&A was a group of young girls, actually, that came and did that. That was really good fun, and I was with a really good fun person doing that. And then the British Library, that was quite an experience because we did it in the lobby whilst the library was open. I could not speak for about 4 days after that. That was quite interesting. The hospital, I taught the doctors to stitch. My daughter, who did medicine, came out of her surgical class and she went, "Yay, my mother taught me to use a curved needle. I'm happy." And she's left-handed. So I taught them. And I've got a dentist on my book who comes to practice stitching. So, I get some interesting people.
Yeah, yeah. No, I just going through all of the things, and I think, oh, what fun it must be to set up a class in some famous old building, and of course, working at the Lancaster Castle.
Yeah.
You have the environment all the time.
Absolutely. I mean, I think some days I get a bit blasé because people come in and go, "Oh my God, this is unbelievable." And it's like, yeah, it's where I work, you know. And there are disadvantages as well. You know, that I can't do evening classes because the castle shuts. They're very minor. I have to say they're very minor disadvantages, you know, and sometimes it's closed to the public, and we've got a royal visit next week. So I've got to tidy my studio so it all looks nice, you know.
Oh.
So things like that.
Is that a frequent thing, royal visits?
Not so much, I don't think. No. No, not really. No, and they're coming to do a bit of sewing, so that'll be interesting.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Because my wife follows the royal family on Instagram, and she's always commenting about, you know, we think of them as, here in the States anyway, as just a family that sits around in their palaces. But she's always telling me about how active they are at events, and it's kind of a neat thing.
Yeah, yeah. Some are busier than others, obviously, but my husband's regiment had Princess Alexandra, who's the Queen's cousin, mm-hmm. and she was the most delightful woman. She really was lovely, and she worked hard.
Yeah.
And she's so pleasant to everybody, and it must be tiring.
Oh, yeah, you know it is.
Yeah, you know, trying to be polite, and people try and touch them,
like
the Pope or something, and so, you know, it must be really tiring.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm sure there are days they get up and go, "Oh, I can't do this today. I just can't do it."
Not Preston in the rain or whatever, or Lancaster in the wind or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Must be hard work.
Yeah. Well, that's neat that you have a place where they will show up. So, yeah.
Yep.
That's great.
Yep.
Yeah, we talk about them like they're some oddball thing, but I mean, they're just humans like everyone
else.
They're
just people, exactly, and they're just come and do their best like everybody else, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So many people who do what you do need a release. You know, at the end of the day, I need to get my mind away. Are you one of those people, or do you go home and have things that you stitch just because you enjoy them?
No. No, I don't. I go bouldering. And I do that on purpose. You know, bouldering is like climbing, but without a rope.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and I do that because it's really good for your shoulders. After a day of crouching over your trestles, you go and it's a really good exercise for your shoulders. So I do bouldering and wild swimming and paddleboarding, things like that. I do active things.
Okay, all right. Just get away from it all. Yeah,
yeah. I do not take my stitching home.
Yeah. Okay, good. Good. Well, I mean, it's healthy. It gives you a balance, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I have to take my admin home sometimes, you know, and do boring admin stuff, but right. I don't take my stitching lives in my studio. It doesn't live in my house.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm quite strict with myself on that level.
Well, that's healthy and good. I had a friend a long time ago. I used to keep a lot of marine aquariums. And he ran an operation that was all rare tropical fish, marine fish, and live coral and that kind of thing. And I asked him one time, I said, you know, what's your aquarium at home? What do you have in your aquarium?
Yeah.
He says, no way. He said, no way. End of the day, he says, I want nothing to do with aquariums. And he was race cars.
Yeah, exactly. I don't even have anything embroidered in my house.
Oh, okay.
I'm
it's
a total minimalist. It's off. Yeah, it's done. I'm a total minimalist, and it's gone. Yeah. And I think that's quite healthy.
Yep.
I'd rather go out and do physical stuff. And you get very sore shoulders if you've been teaching all day and working all day. And so I think it's best just to stop.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, and I'm getting old.
Well, yeah, but you can still keep the shoulders moving.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, my wife and I have worked at home for years now. And when we first started working at home, we found ourselves talking about work because we work on, we do trade magazines, and we work together on the same magazine. And, you know, weekends, meals, evenings. And finally, one day, it was, wait a minute, this is ridiculous. We've got to stop. We've got to say at 5, 5:30 in the afternoon, that's it.
Absolutely.
And weekends, no, we're not doing absolutely. This stuff. Yeah.
Because I've just been climbing in the Cairngorms with my daughters and a friend, and we banned talk of anybody's work.
Oh, okay.
It was done. And they're all professionals, and we just said, that's it, and we're not talking about them. That's done. So we had a lovely time not talking about work.
Yeah. Yeah, and you have to kind of work at that.
Yeah, but I think you need to. One of the best pieces of advice I was given on my Future Tutor course was give yourself a day off.
Ah.
You know, you're self-employed. Make sure you take time off.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to work 7 days a week, 12 hours a day.
Oh, yeah, it is. I agree. Yeah.
It's very difficult to say no to people. And I'm only just after being in business 5 years saying, actually, no, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been asked to do talks 200 miles away, and I was going, yeah, that'd be great. You know, and driving 200 miles, and what am I doing? This is crazy. I'm doing a talk for an hour and driving 200 miles to it. And you say yes to everything when you're first qualified.
Yeah.
I think there's this absolute fear of I'll never get any work. You know, I'm out on my own and I'm self-employed. I need work. I need to get work. I need to get work. And I'm just at the point of, and I don't know whether it's because I'm 60 tomorrow or whatever. I'm saying no. I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Well, you do get caught up in that and you burn yourself out.
Yeah. And you get resentful.
Yeah.
You know, you turn around and say, do you know what? I haven't had a day off in 2 weeks. Like it's somebody else's fault.
Right.
Yeah. And it's
get
your
in front
fault.
Of a mirror.
You know? Yeah, give yourself a break, you know? Yeah, absolutely. So I'm getting better at saying I am taking Sunday off.
Yeah.
I'm not going into the studio because, of course, the castle's open 7 days a week. So I will actually say I am not going into the studio today.
Yeah, that's got to be that's got to be tough to turn that down. Yeah.
Yeah, it is because, you know, I've always got something to do.
Yeah. No, it's an interesting thing these days that the whole work, well, and the pandemic has taught a lot of people about that work-life balance. But, you know, when you can work at home or, in your case, 2 minutes away, it is really easy to just get sucked in and never stop. And
absolutely.
It's
not good for you. You know, it's not good for you, and it's not good for other people around you.
No, not at all. Yeah. No.
It really isn't. I think it's easier to say yes than no.
Yep.
You know, I did it in the first few years where I'd say yes, and then the sort of thing came, and it'd be like, oh, why did I say yes to this? I can't believe I said, well, why didn't I just say no? So I've taught myself to say no. You know, thank you very much for your offer, but I'm afraid I can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, because you feel like you're letting them down.
And, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And mostly it's really nice people, you know, that are trying to get their stitching group together or whatever, and it's very difficult, but... Yeah. Just have to do it.
Just can't do it. Yep.
Yeah.
So what lies ahead for you? More classes, exhibits? What's on the horizon?
Definitely. I've got all sorts boiling up. I'm writing a book.
Oh.
I'm writing a book about animals in embroidery. There's very few out there, so I'm writing that. I'm doing an exhibition at a hall down the road. Oh, I say down the road, about half an hour down the road in Gawthorpe Hall, which is one of the old stately homes up in the north, about the witches. So I'm going to do a load of witches hanging, but each of them is going to have a different embroidery technique on their dress. They haven't given it the go ahead yet. They don't know. They've given it a go ahead for the exhibition, but I'm not sure they know what I'm planning. But anyway, it should be fun. So I've got that on the think that's happening. I'm going to India in March, leading a tour to India in March. That should be fun. Going up into the Himalayas, that would be great fun. I've got lots going on. And of course, I want to keep my classes going. That's my base is my classes. That I really like the people, and I get a lot out of it. So they're my base.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, Sarah, thanks so much. This has been a special time. We really appreciate you making the time for us, and really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. I've had a great time.
And thanks to everyone for listening.